An audio poo-poo platter. A radio smorgasbord. We're WEBR, Fairfax's cable access radio station. And we're non-fattening.
And I'm Andy Finn. And this is the Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio, and I'm full of it. So, back to Fred Hyatt's editorial in today's Washington Post. Today is June 9th, 2008. And by the way, it's the birthday of one of the biggest celebrities in Hollywood, Donald Duck. Now, I know he took a lot of heat after he got caught in that affair with Minnie Mouse, but he's mostly really rehabilitated his record. And can you guess what year Donald Duck was born? It's almost the same year Mickey Mouse was born. I think it is the same year Mickey Mouse was born, 1934, although they don't list Mickey Mouse here. Well, this wouldn't be his birthday. Mickey would have been born on a different day, of course. So Donald was born in 1934. He's older than Dick Vitale. Dick Vitale was born in 1940. I'm not sure who the bigger star is, but I got to say, I'd rather listen to Donald Duck than Dick Vitale. Sorry, sports fans, but that's the way it is. Anyway, back to Fred Hyatt's editorial about Bush lied. If only it were that simple. Hyatt was basically making the case that Bush and Cheney may have misread the intelligence, but that it wasn't a willful or a deliberate mischaracterization. I got news for you. That is wrong. R-O-N-G, wrong. And let me tell you a little story to explain this. Basically, if you look at, before I get to the story, if you look at Bush, what Bush and Cheney did with the intelligence, every time there were caveats in an intelligence report. We never heard about this. They put the worst possible face on every piece of evidence and said, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. They conflated chemical, biological, and nuclear to make it scarier. We never had the phrase WMD until the Bush administration came along, and suddenly it was WMD all day, all the time. There's a big difference between chemical, biological, and nuclear. And eventually, Bush had to rattle the nuclear saber before he could get the country to go to war. But this idea that every piece of evidence that came along, he looked at the worst of it. You could say that that's just, you know, no, it wasn't willful. He was just very afraid in the wake of 9/11. Maybe, I don't even want a president who's that afraid, but I want a president with better judgment. And now I'll tell you a little story. I used to work for a restaurant in Webster, New York called Hedges 9 Mile Point Hotel. And it's a classy restaurant. You write down your hours and you put them in a book and you round them off to the nearest quarter hour. So you write your start time and your end time. And when you end at that line, you write the total hours, so if it's 8 1/4 hours, you write 8 1/4 hours, and they pay you an hourly wage, and you make the rest of your money in tips. Well, I started there, and the first 15 weeks I worked full-time at Hedges, they miscalculated my pay. And every time I had to go back and point out to them that they misadded the hours. There's only 6 days a week that I was working, so they were adding up 6 numbers, including fractions, and always getting it wrong. And I finally complained to the owner. And I said, Olga, you've shorted me 15 weeks in a row. You've miscounted my hours. And she said, oh, I'm sure it wasn't intentional. And I said, Olga, if just one time you had erred in my direction and paid me for more hours than I worked, then I could see where it might be an honest mistake in addition. But every single time, 15 weeks in a row, you made the error in your favor. What am I to think about that? And I apply the same lesson to George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Every single time they looked at the intelligence, they made it sound worse than it was. They never you can't point to one example of an intelligence estimate or an issue where they downplayed it or came out and went with the interpretation that was more favorable to the idea of not going to war. They never erred in that direction. Every one of their errors was in the direction of being more hawkish. Right? The aluminum tubes. There were reports that those could not, absolutely could not be used for centrifuges and nuclear production, that they were not high enough quality, so therefore they must have been tubes for missiles or weapons, I don't know, shells. There was another group that said, no, these look like they're for nuclear processing. But the Bush administration went with that explanation. If just once they had gone with the more innocuous explanation, I might believe that these were honest mistakes. They weren't honest mistakes. You don't have to say they, quote, lied, okay? But they cherry-picked the intelligence and they built a case that they must have known they were exaggerating so they could get their way and take us to war. So I was very disappointed in Fred Hyatt's editorial. It's really pretty weak reasoning. But I understand why he's doing that. He got suckered in on Iraq, too, and he still is defending it. Let's move on to the election, because there was a lot going on. So first of all, history was made last week. Tuesday night, as the final two primaries ended, Barack Obama went over the top with delegates. A bunch of superdelegates came forward and declared for Obama. And then he won the state of Oregon, I think it was. And he got delegates there. And he got a few delegates in the other state that finished up, which was it South Dakota? In any case, he went over the top. So here we are, the first time an African-American candidate, actually he's half white, half black, but we therefore call him black. First time a major party has named an African-American to be president. And it was only 50 years ago, blacks had to go to the colored water fountains and the colored restrooms all over the South. And today, one of them is on the verge of the presidency of the United States. It's pretty amazing. Of course, the other drama that played out in the last week was the Hillary Clinton drama. I love the Dana Milbank column called Campaign Sketch. Actually, it's just called Washington Sketch, usually. It's on page 2, usually, of the Washington Post. And you know, it's not the same when people read it online. I often see bloggers complain about Milbank's column that it's not news and it's too cutesy or it's too opinionated or whatever. You have to realize when you see that it's printed on page 3, or actually it's usually on page 2, inside the Washington Post, and it's called Washington Sketch, his job is to be a little tongue-in-cheek, to have a little fun. So the title of it was, the next day after Hillary basically didn't concede defeat and also didn't congratulate Barack Obama on winning the nomination, Bill Milbank's column is titled, In Defeat, Clinton Graciously Pretends to Win. I have to tell you, I was pretty upset with Hillary and her campaign that night. You know, we've all known that Obama had an insurmountable lead. And if Hillary wants to stay until the end, fine. Then she wants to stay until the end. She wants to get as many votes as she can, as many delegates as she can, prove that she's not just the number two person. And not just that she outdistances Edwards, who dropped out earlier, but that she is nearly Obama's equal. Of course, close doesn't count in politics the way it does in horseshoes. But if that's what she wanted to prove, that's okay. And that's what people agreed. But everyone figured that when he went over the top in delegates, she would get out. Now, her strategist must have known it would be likely to happen Tuesday night. It shouldn't have taken her by surprise, but for whatever reason, she couldn't concede Tuesday night. More than that, that she couldn't concede, she was still in full-bore campaign mode. She sent Terry McAuliffe out to the talk shows that day and the day before with a very, very upbeat message, strangely enough, since it didn't look like she could win the nomination. And he introduced her that night by saying, "Will you welcome the next president of the United States?" Well, by then, Obama had the nomination. He had the delegates for the nomination. There's no way she was going to be the next president of the United States. So it looked like she was delusional. She then gave a speech in which she claimed the mantle of the candidate who got more votes than any candidate in history of the primaries. Okay, so she's counting Michigan because people voted for her, but she's not giving Barack any votes from Michigan, even though 40% of the state didn't vote for her, none of the above, or chose undecided. Obama and all the other Democrats took their name off the Michigan ballot. So you can't count Michigan. But she does, and then she says she's got more votes than he does. Turns out, votes don't matter. It's delegates. So I was very disappointed in the way Hillary chose to do this. She congratulated her campaign, her people. I get all that. She also congratulated Obama for running a great campaign. She made it sound like he lost. She never conceded that he won the nomination that night. And she basically claimed to be not just having gotten more popular votes than him, which you have to do some fancy counting to get to that number, but she claimed that she would be the better president and that the Democratic Party, the superdelegates, were going to have to make up their mind who to nominate. Well, Obama's in a completely different camp, of course. A completely different position. Obama's required to be nice to her. She can be as snippy as she wants. I mean, basically, it was his night. She should have stepped aside and let him have his moment of glory. Instead, she gives a victory speech on the night that she lost. It was pretty strange. So Obama's gracious to her because he needs her voters, so he was very kind and said nice things about her and all. And then Hillary announces at the end of her speech that she's not going to make any decisions tonight. She needs time to think. She's going to go home, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the calls started coming in right after that and all the next day, and Democrats all over the country, meaning powerful Democrats, senators, governors, and all, got to her and said, "Look, Hillary, you have got to concede. You ran a good race, but it's over." Even her supporters, many of them, said, "You just can't continue this and hope that something happens. It's over." So they scheduled the final Hillary rally for Saturday. The race for the cure was happening in town here. I think it couldn't have been 40,000, but maybe it was. It was huge. A breast cancer race where people raise money for breast cancer research and solutions. And she held it right after that finished, in a wonderful space in downtown Washington. And she had thousands of people there, and she conceded. She not only conceded, she told her followers, "We need to work for Barack Obama and get him elected." So she gave a really good speech. It was much about her. That is, it was her and her followers. Bill Clinton was there, but he didn't speak. Obama wasn't invited, and I think that was probably okay with the Obama campaign. They thought, look, if you're having trouble getting out of the race, get it together, get out, and you and I'll meet on stage at another point when there's no chance your people will boo me, basically. No, when there's a better opportunity for the country to focus on Obama, right then they're going to be focused on Hillary, as are her supporters in the room. So Hillary is done, finally, after the speech Saturday. And she gave a pretty good speech, and she was pretty convincing that she's going to work for the Democratic ticket. Now, listen to Republicans on Fox News, the talk show host, they are still hoping that she'll muck things up. So they talk about how she wasn't sincere or whatever it is they say about her. But they are whistling past the graveyard, if and you ask me. In any case, let's listen to a little bit more of R.E.M., who's going to be in town this week on Wednesday night at Meriwether Post, as we go to break. Back on the Andy Finn Show, and we're talking about Hillary and her concession speech. So Hillary did give a good speech. I don't know that it was the blockbuster, the barn burner that some people thought it was, but it was interesting to listen to some how some conservatives dealt with it. Forget if it, I think it was it Fred Barnes or Charles Krauthammer? I get these conservatives confused on Fox News. I think it was Fred Barnes. When Hillary used the expression that, thank you, we put 18 million cracks in the glass ceiling. And he found fault with her use of the glass ceiling and equated it with her claiming, he made it sound like you say, mentioning the glass ceiling is like saying that this was a race, that she lost because of sexism. And he made the argument she didn't lose because of sexism. She lost because she and her people didn't run as smart a campaign as they could have. They made significant mistakes, which is true, and that they got beat by a better candidate, which is also true. But there's a difference between the glass ceiling and sexism. He's saying she was saying there was sexism, and that's why she lost. Mara Liasson, I think it was Mara Liasson, tried to make the case that, no, they're different things, but she wasn't very articulate about it. Let me be articulate about it. Here's what I'd have said to Fred Barnes if they were smart enough to let me on Fox to handle some of these conservatives. We have 13 women in the U.S. Senate. Okay? Until we had one woman in there was a glass ceiling in the Senate. Whether it was due to sexism or just even women didn't think women belonged in the Senate, whatever the reason, that's a glass ceiling when no woman's ever done it before. Even now, we only have 13 women in the U.S. Senate. We won't have true equality till we have 50 women in the U.S. Senate, or at least something approaching 50. Then you could say, yeah, we're pretty equal here. But until then, we're a society that's dominated by men in the boardroom. Most of the vast majority of CEOs in the Fortune 500 companies, more than 90% are men. 87% of the U.S. Senate is men. Similar percentages in a lot of other offices. But women are making gains. But there is a glass ceiling when it comes to the presidency, and Hillary correctly referred to it as, quote, the last glass ceiling. We've had a woman Supreme Court justice. We've had women senators and representatives. We've got women governors in a number of places. The last glass ceiling is the presidency, and until someone shatters it, the principle of the glass ceiling is it's made of glass so that it looks like you can get through it. You can see past it to the highest rungs of power. But in the corporate world, the meaning is that it's an invisible barrier that women don't get past. And since no woman has gotten the presidency yet, by definition, there's a glass ceiling. And why Moralizing was unable to point that out, I don't know. But Fred Barnes doesn't understand the concept of a glass ceiling. So I thought I'd explain it to him. So I agree with Hillary on that one. The real issue with Hillary is this. How hard will she campaign for Obama? Right? It's really important that she campaign for Obama, and frankly, that Bill Clinton campaign for Obama, and hard. Now, they say, that is the Inside the Beltway pundits, say that the real problem Obama's going to have is with Bill Clinton, that he feels more than Hillary that she was robbed, that he more than she wanted this badly, and that it's going to take him a while to get over this. Also, Bill Clinton was accused of being racist because he made comments after the South Carolina primary that even Jesse Jackson won the South Carolina primary. He didn't think that was offensive, but of course, we're in a hyper tense situation when it comes to potential slurs or slights, racial or gender-based. So Clinton's feeling like his legacy is being attacked and that he should be cut some slack because he was good for blacks. So Obama's going to have to win him over, whatever that means. So we'll see what happens. Well, I got to tell you something else Obama said that I didn't like. He was given a rally in which it was part of an effort to bring the Olympics to Chicago in 2016. And he made the statement, in 2016, I'll be wrapping up my second term as president. I don't think he should have said that. I think you should take it one term at a time. And taken in isolation, that comment doesn't sound good. It means he expects to be elected twice. Let's get through the first one first and then worry about the second one there, Barack. There's a lot of talk about whether Hillary Democrats will vote for Hillary or McCain. The conservatives, and I'm listening to some talk radio, people like Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, and then I'm listening to these talk shows, Sunday morning and other talk shows where, like, Fox News is surrounded by conservatives, right? Fred Barnes, Brit Hume, Chris Wallace leading the discussion. But the point is that they all have a conservative bias. And so when asked, they actually believe that a percentage, a pretty good percentage of these people who went for Hillary will not vote for Obama, and they believe the exit polls that suggest that these people will go over to McCain and they won't vote for Obama. I have news for them. People said that in 76. Reagan backers said they wouldn't vote for Ford. It happens in a lot of elections, but some elections more than others, and every time voters come home to their party. So this idea that somehow it's going to be different this year, I think Republicans are whistling past the graveyard, if you know that expression. That is, they're pretending everything is okay, when in fact they are in deep, 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 doo-doo. Interesting suggestion from John McCain, and the Obama campaign says they're looking at it. McCain challenged Barack Obama to hold a series of 10 joint town meetings with him in which they wouldn't have many rules and they could address each other directly and talk to the American people. I think this is a great idea. I don't know if Obama will do it, but I think these two guys are free and open enough that they would take a chance and do it. You know, otherwise all we're going to get are the three debates that take place, usually one in late September, two in early October, plus a vice presidential debate. And 10 town hall meetings would be pretty cool. And I think McCain thinks that he would do well in that setting, but I think Obama would do well as well. The whole country would get to know him better. This is clearly to Obama's advantage in that regard. McCain challenges him on it primarily because it's to McCain's advantage. I'm sorry, McCain's advantage to catch up to him, because McCain's behind by the latest tracking poll from Gallup suggests Obama's up 48% to 42% nationwide. And so that just came out today. So I could see where McCain thinks, gee, I should face off with this guy as many times as possible, and then people will see I'm the better guy. But Obama should want it too, because he's not that well defined, and rather than have 3 more months up until the conventions where the Republicans try and tar him and he tries to defend himself and attack McCain, I think Obama would be better off with these 10 town hall meetings. So we'll have to see how it plays out. But that's an interesting suggestion on the part of John McCain. And let's see. Oh, I've got a whole analysis. We could do a swing states here, but we're not going to. And vice presidential candidates. I guess it's worth just mentioning that the media is focused every day now on, will Obama pick Hillary Clinton? I can save you some time, folks. There is no way in heck that Obama is going to pick Hillary Clinton when it can reliably be determined that hell has frozen over. That's when he'll pick Hillary. It just isn't going to happen. There are several reasons for that, but the biggest is that he doesn't need another power base within his administration that he can't control. Hillary by herself would be a power base he probably can't control. A government in waiting, as someone said. But you get two for the price of one here. So former President Bill Clinton is also part of this government in waiting. And actually, it would be, as this person described, and I can't remember who said this in their editorial, basically it would be both a government in waiting and a government in exile. So there's no way he's going to pick Hillary. He has to prepare her for that, Hillary's troops for that. And then I don't think he can pick a woman, because the question becomes, if you're going to pick a woman, why didn't you take Hillary? And I don't think he wants to answer that question. So if you rule out Hillary and you rule out women, that leaves Catherine Sebelius out. She's the governor of Missouri, and a state that, I'm sorry, governor of Kansas, and a state that probably isn't in play anyway for Obama, but I don't think he can choose her. People have John Edwards on the list. I don't think there's any way he's going to choose John Edwards. John Edwards can't deliver his home state of North Carolina to Obama, I don't think, even though they've got it in play, and Obama may do well there anyway. But I don't think Edwards can deliver it. He couldn't deliver it for Gore. Which leaves us with the top two choices that a lot of people are picking. The first one is Ted Strickland, who I think would be my preference. He's the governor of Ohio. And, of course, Ohio is a tough state for Democrats. It's a swing state that if Obama wins it, Democrats have a much easier path to 270 electoral votes. So we'll have to see. But the other possibility is Jim Webb. I don't really want to see him choose Jim Webb, my senator. Webb just got in office. But he's got the military credentials. He's got a lot of credentials. So it's conceivable they will pick Webb. I don't know. We will have to check that out. In any case, that'll do it for tonight's edition of the Andy Finn Show. We'll be back next week on WEBR Radio. And until then, you can check my writings, my blogs, and previous shows at my website, andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us. And now we're prepared for Midnight Mutants with Adam C. and the rest of the crew. Remember, do it. Don't doubt it.